Saturdays in the South start right here with college football talk all summer long on The Roar, part of the ESPN family.
Welcome you in. Final hour of the program here on a Thursday with Facts and Childress and John Hyde on the Roar. 654-ROAR is the number if you want to check in with us. And Grayson Mann now joins us from TigerNet. For TigerNet Thursdays, Grayson, how are you doing, man? Appreciate you joining us.
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
Doing well. Excited to get into some discourse throughout the course of the final hour. And Grayson, I know that an email has likely come across your desk in the last couple of days, probably with an approved credential for ACC kickoff up in Charlotte. So first and foremost, will I see you next month up in Charlotte at ACC kickoff?
I will be there. Okay. I think we're going to be attempting to be there for multiple days like last time as well. Try to get a real scope of the conference this year.
Yeah.
A lot of interesting players
for certain. And that's going to breed some interesting discourse leading up to this event, because we see narratives, we see storylines put into the world by the media throughout the course of off seasons, and then up in Charlotte is when we actually get to put our money where our mouth is and vote on the thing. And last year, I kind of felt like the one gif of the guy pulling out the sword and it's like 50 million people just rolling at him with my Florida State hate, who was picked the winner of this league, which I went on every microphone I could find in Charlotte of anybody that would give me the airtime and said that I thought that was ludicrous and they were going to stink. That ended up being correct. I got some things wrong at ACC kickoff in Charlotte last year, like my Virginia Tech love, because Brent Pry can't win a one-score game for the life of him. He's 1-13 now in 14 one-score games, and they lost like every game they lost last year by one score. So we had some right, we had some wrong, but it's always a blast up in Charlotte, and I actually think we've got an underrated league on our hands this year in totality. I know the ACC gets a lot of crap. I'm not saying this is the SEC or the Big Ten, but I think this is a definitively better league than the Big 12 for certain, and probably deserves a little bit more respect than it's getting in the preseason. Your thoughts?
It's getting a little bit of, I think, that reputation that it's built over this decade, where Clemson sort of has been in flux, and you've been waiting on them to return and that be the face of your league. And then when you pick Florida State, obviously, to win the ACC in 2024, and then they beat Charleston Southern and I think it was Cal off of that low-scoring fest on Saturday night. Your league's reputation sort of is called into question, and it's going to largely, I think, be determined by out-of-conference games this year, because regardless of how good the ACC is and if they beat each other up, we all probably expect Clemson to be the ACC champion.
Yeah.
But let's say the Georgia Techs, the SMUs, the Syracuses, there's a lot of 8-4s in there. I don't think they're going to get the same credit as maybe an SEC or Big Ten, just because of the nature of how things, that's just how things are. But it'll be fascinating, because you've got a lot of players like an SMU who just made the playoff. I'm really high on Georgia Tech this year. Bill Belichick, how is that going to work in the ACC? It's going to be fascinating, facts, and at the very least, there's a lot of teams that I think would be dangerous, quote unquote.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. I think this is an underrated league. I think Clemson's schedule is actually going to prove to be pretty darn difficult in comparison to what many anticipate, and I'm excited to get the ball rolling on the ACC season as we continue to visit with Grayson Mann from TigerNet as a part of TigerNet Thursdays here on The Roar. Grayson, I want to shift gears and start talking about individual teams. Like, we're going to get to Clemson. If you guys have questions on Clemson or more within the ACC or just general 2025 college football, 654-ROAR is the number, but there's a few teams in specific that I want to ask you about to start things off. And the first of which is a name that has been in the storylines and the media and, you know, I would say the national headlines, because it's the truth with On3 and Nakos and all those guys.
I know where you're going.
You know where I'm going with this. I want to stay out of the weeds on the specific quotes too much, because we've covered that pretty extensively, but we've all heard Castellanos' quotes. If you've been tuned into the show the last couple of days, Castellanos ran his mouth and said that Nick Saban couldn't save Alabama anymore and they can't stop him, and then he ran all over the ACC by himself the last couple of years, none of which is overly true. But from a football standpoint, this is one of the more captivating teams in the country, because when is the last time we've seen volatility from one year to the next, like 13-0 to 2-10? I think Florida State is fascinating to me this year with how good they're going to be or how bad they're going to be. I don't know where I've got them. Gun to head, I'm 7-8 win range right now on the Seminoles, but what are your thoughts from afar on the Castellanos saga and how that could pan out down in Tallahassee?
You know, I think, and for all of his comments, and you and I talked about this before the show even started, was that he's done this before on your show, where he talked about sort of coming down to Tallahassee. Now, whether you think he was a byproduct of that or he was the actual reason and the catalyst for it is up to opinion, but it's a fascinating Florida State team because there's another element of this group with Gus Malzahn being the offensive coordinator and coming back into the Power Four, coming over from UCF. I feel like that could be an interesting pairing. There's a lot of volatility, like you said, and I think it's a big year for Mike Norvell when it comes down to the recruiting side of things, of the image that Florida State, because even with the 2-10 season, they're recruiting pretty well for only winning two games in 2024. So I think I agree with you there, probably seven. I'd probably fall in more of the under, maybe six wins. I'm not a big believer in Norvell, I never really have been.
Yeah.
And I think that Castellanos, while he's a great athlete, I think in one possession games where teams know he's going to have to throw the football, I just don't think he can get it done.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that. I like the fit schematically of a mobile quarterback going to Norvell. I think that O'Brien put Castellanos in a really terrible position last year from a schematic standpoint because, let's face it, Castellanos doesn't do anything well that O'Brien wants in his quarterback. This is the same guy that wanted Jalen Milroe to go play wide receiver or running back. Bill O'Brien is outwardly and openly outspoken against mobile quarterbacks. He wanted his guy to have these 3-5 step drops, structured and in the pocket, pro-style offense under center. That's not what Thomas Castellanos is in the slightest. So I do think that this is going to give him some more breathing room, for lack of a better term, to rock out and play his own game and get outside of structure and make some stuff happen. So we'll see how everything shakes out down in Tallahassee, but definitely some interesting commentary from Castellanos throughout the course of the offseason. 654 Roar if you want to check in on ACC football. I want to take another angle to this because we just talked about the biggest underachiever in the ACC last year. Let's talk about the biggest overachiever, the Duke Blue Devils. Duke goes to 9-4 in Manny Diaz's debut season. They pick up one of the most talented quarterbacks in the country in Darian Mensa from Tulane. The defense was solid. They returned seven starters, two open dates in October. This feels like a team that has a chance to build on their success. Now, I'm not going to put them in the top five of the conference. I'm not going to say they're going to win nine games again, but it feels like they could build on this and win 7-8 games once again with a guy like Mensa, who, again, has multiple years of eligibility after this. I hate to use the term franchise quarterback in college athletics, but with the way that this is pretty much free agency now, getting a guy with multiple years of eligibility is a premium, and that's what I kind of view Mensa for Duke. I think he's your quote-unquote franchise guy that you're going to try and find a way to put the right pieces around just 1 year of the next three and maybe try and make a run to Charlotte.
Yeah, continuity is going to be so important, and you mentioned the franchise quarterback tag. The real continuity with this team is going to be Manny Diaz and this defense.
Yeah.
And I felt like last year, there were so many instances where Duke was creating turnovers, creating stops, and you flip it over to the offense with Malik Murphy and unable to sustain anything. And so that's where a lot of those losses come from. So they're competing on the field. I think they play with a lot of spirit and a lot of energy. And then you add Darian Mensa into the mix, who has proven a track record of success over Tulane coming over to Duke. And I think for this program, I don't think it should be framed as, oh, if they're not in that top echelon of the ACC, that's a successful year. If they go 8-4 again for Duke, that's pretty good.
I think
for that program, that's kind of the standard there. And if you can keep building on that positive foundation, they've been pretty good this decade.
Yeah.
So to only build on that further, and they got a matchup against Clemson later in the season. It's going to be interesting to see how that goes out.
Definitely so. 654 Roar is the number if you want to check in. Grayson, I want to ask you about the other side of the coin on the Castellanos thing. Boston College. Admittedly, I don't know much about what the outlook looks like this year for the Eagles. They have an Alabama transfer quarterback in Dylan Longoren. They've got Clemson, Notre Dame, and SMU on the schedule. Does Boston College improve, or do they regress without Tommy Touchdowns?
I think they're just going to sort of stay in this middle ground of the ACC, where they're probably going to stay around that 7-5, 6-6 range. I like Bill O'Brien as a coach. I know he's pretty stubborn with his reputation and just sort of how he likes to manage certain teams, and obviously, the beef between he and Castellanos was pretty public, but I just don't think they really have the talent to make this significant jump. A lot of the teams in the ACC, like Duke, Louisville, Georgia Tech, retain some talent. I know they lost Singleton, but you bring back Haynes King and Jamal Haynes on that end. So there's one of the teams that I didn't feel like got better, but I don't really feel like they got worse either. So I think they're just kind of in this rut in 2025. I don't really see them making this big jump, but I don't see them being terrible either.
Yeah, definitely in agreement for the most part there. 654 Roar is the number if you want to check in. Knowles fan checks in and says, after a 2-win season, I don't think anybody should be talking smack in Tallahassee. But I do at least like that my QB has a pulse this year. Going to be an interesting year. Go Knowles. And listen, I don't love the commentary from Castellanos because I think some of it lacks self-awareness to a certain extent. However, I will always maintain that I want my quarterback to be vocal and I want my quarterback to be confident. And
maybe be vocal in the locker room, not necessarily
in the media. Yeah.
Yeah. Aaron, as Nick Saban once said, who was mentioned in the quote, that's rat poison for certain teams.
I'm going to give you two teams with new quarterbacks that are expected to contend for this league, and I want you to tell me which of these two teams you're buying and which of these two teams you're selling.
Okay.
Miami-Louisville. Miami coming off of a season in which they had a good year. They had the Heisman Trophy winner. They went 10-3. It's Cristobal's best mark in his 3 years, now entering year four with no ACC championship or college football playoff appearances for the greatest coach since sliced bread Mario Cristobal is what we're told every year. They have an easy schedule this year for the most part. They open with four straight non-con games. They don't play an ACC contest until October 4th. They avoid Clemson on the schedule, if I'm not mistaken. Talk to me a little bit about what Miami is going to look like this year with Carson Beck at the helm playing quarterback. I don't know what this is going to look like, but to be honest with you, last year I was all on the sell train, and I was telling you guys that the ACC championship talks were ridiculous, and that ended up aging well. I am tentatively buying a little bit of what Miami is selling as of right now. Your thoughts?
I'm not a big Carson Beck believer. I never really have been. I feel like he's very much a slightly above-average passer, and I know last year at Georgia, he probably had the more cases of the drops than I've ever seen before. So we have to give him credit there. And Miami is doing a fantastic job of building a bunch of talent. I remember having a conversation with one of Miami's, I think it was a Rivals writer a couple years ago, and they said 2025 and 2026 were those years where going to be all that talent inserted into this program, and it was going to be up to Mario Cristobal to get it done. Well, last year, that was one of those times, the 2024-2025 season, he necessarily didn't get it done, and it feels like there are always this massive expectations that he's having to shoulder, and it feels like he makes one mistake or overthinks a certain game plan, and it just doesn't happen. So I need to see it to believe it with Miami. I really like Louisville this year. I think that's got to be one of Clemson's tougher opponents, tougher matchups. A Friday night in November, short week, that's one of those, if I'm a Clemson fan, I'm thinking, okay, after LSU, what on the schedule worries me, and it'd probably be road games against Georgia Tech and Louisville. But you bring in Miller Moss, who's, I think, getting less credit than he deserves for the atrocity built around him at USC, and the talent that they're bringing back, what they're able to do, sort of taking people by surprise in certain ways.
Yeah.
I think I like Louisville a little bit better than Miami, but I wouldn't be shocked regardless if that talent just is able to bail Cristobal out just a little bit.
Yeah, definitely in agreement. I love Mario the recruiter. I love Mario the trenches builder. I love Mario the program builder. I don't love Mario on game day. And that's always going to be my take on the guy, is I think he's a good head coach. I think if the goal is to provide stability to your program, to influx with talent, and to establish a pretty high floor, Mario Cristobal is your guy. If your goal is to win, Mario Cristobal is not your guy. And again, not a diss. He had the most talented roster in the league every year at Oregon and could never win. He had the most talented quarterback in the league every year at Oregon and could never win. He had an NFL S-tier quarterback in Justin Herbert and could never win, even when he just needed to beat 5-5 Arizona State to go to the college football playoff.
Yeah.
So we're now into year four of this thing that I've been told is going to be this unbelievable domination of the ACC from Cristobal. Joker hasn't even made it to Charlotte, so I'm not moved. I think he's a good coach, and I think he has strengths, and I think he has weaknesses. Make it to Charlotte if you want my respect, and it's really as simple as that. And I think that's fair. Entering year four of something with the amount of hype that they've received every year, Grayson, that you deserve a little bit of pushback when you haven't met that standard. You had the Heisman Trophy winner, and you could not make the lowly ACC championship game. Right? The number one pick, not the Heisman Trophy winner. The number one pick. That's my bad. But you had the number one pick in the draft and a Heisman Trophy candidate in Cam Ward, best quarterback in the country, and you couldn't make the ACC championship game?
Ooh, rough.
And
now, we also have to acknowledge that a lot of that wasn't on Cam Ward. The defensive struggles were pretty significant last year. But that comes back
to your head coach.
Yeah,
Your head coach recruiting that side of the ball. Your head coach is hiring the coordinator. Your head coach is definitely involved in that on the defensive side of the ball. So that's where I'm at on Miami as of right now. I'm tentatively buying that they can win 9-10 games again. I think Beck is a little bit better than given credit for and can game manage and put guys. I think they're going to run the ball a lot, which is probably a good thing. But I got to believe it to see it to believe it, in relation to making the ACC championship game and actually winning anything of significance headed into the upcoming season. Final team we'll preview this segment before we take a break and then get Noah on the phone lines and shift gears would be Virginia. What is our expectation this year for Tony E? 11-23 overall with Tony Elliott. It feels like a make or break year, but this is the best quarterback they've had in Chandler Morris, transferring in from North Texas. It feels like they've got a little bit more of a pulse and some momentum established in the right direction. Clearly, Tony has dealt with an immense amount of adversity with the tragedy, inheriting a program that was nowhere near ready to win. I think he's done a really darn good job overall, but where are you at as of right now on Virginia football headed into the upcoming campaign?
I remember having a conversation with Elliot. We just sort of had the, and this is one of the benefits of ACC kickoff, is that if you go on a certain day or you're there at a certain time, you may get a pretty much a sidebar conversation with some of these head coaches. And the way he described about expectations and sort of having a more complete season, because obviously he's very much acknowledged the struggles that Virginia's had. It's like, yeah, we had big wins. We beat North Carolina and Drake May last year. We've been able to have these big moments, but it sometimes comes down to the games maybe not on our radar that we're not paying attention to. And I think this year, particularly, last year, felt like Virginia in 0-6-6 isn't going to really pop off to a lot of people. But Virginia made a bowl game. And so I think in terms of progress, that's a step in the right direction. And now you bring another transfer quarterback, and we just keep adding to this list of transfer QBs coming to the ACC. And I think that only serves to strengthen the conference. Chandler Morris, someone I really like out of North Texas, ran a really electric offense there with the Green Eagles, so we'll see how that works out. But I do like Virginia to get slightly better, and I think for them, it's sort of how we talked about Duke. No one's expecting Virginia to compete for the ACC title, but if you're 7-5, even 8-4, that's a heck of a season.
Yeah, definitely rooting for Tony E this year up in Charlottesville. We're going to take a quick break, continue to talk Clemson and ACC football on the other side, and we'll also grab Noah from Spartanburg off the phone lines. 654-ROAR is the number if you want to check in here on The Roar.
Here in the Upstate, we take care of each other. As your local internet provider, that's Upcountry Fiber's promise to you. We're proud to bring you a connection strong enough to handle anything, like the Zoom interview for your dream job, streaming the newest TV show, or all your grandkids and their devices descending on your home. Upcountry Fiber brings a reliable internet service for your kids' virtual school day or remote work-from-home job, even in the most rural areas. Upcountry Fiber, a stronger connection starts here. Learn more today at upcountryfiber.com.
Discover the best-kept golf and dining secret located in Oconee County off I-85 at Exit 1. Chickasaw Point, with breathtaking golf on the hills course to scrumptious dining at Overlook Restaurant and Bar. It's unlike any golf course you've played anywhere in the Upstate. Reserve Overlook Restaurant for a meeting, wedding, birthday, or anniversary. Enjoy lunch and dinner selections from executive chef Amanda Lewis. For Overlook, go to ChickasawPoint.com, and for golf, ChickasawPointGolf.com.
When your loading dock equipment or garage doors aren't working properly, your business can come to a halt. That's where American Doormasters comes in. We specialize in the repair and maintenance of loading dock equipment, from dock levelers to door seals, ensuring your operation runs smoothly and efficiently. Need a new garage door or spring replacements, openers, or routine tune-ups? We've got you covered. Fast, reliable service to keep your business moving. Call American Doormasters at 864-990-3075 or visit AmericanDoormasters.com for expert service and repairs. We'll get you back on track quickly.
Book your next party at Carson Steakhouse in Anderson with a large private dining room to suit all of life's celebrations, corporate and social group events. Host a family or school reunion to remember. Book your reservation and they handle the rest. Double fried chicken wings, fresh baked yeast rolls, hand-cut steaks, grilled teriyaki salmon, and fresh strawberry shortcake, just to name a few delicious menu items. Make your reservation today. Call 226-9400. Again, that's 226-9400. Carson Steakhouse, Anderson.
Concerned about a potential gas leak at home? No worries. Fort Hill Natural Gas, your safety-focused energy provider, has you covered. Natural Gas, renowned for its safety and reliability, ensures your household comfort while it's colorless and odorless. We've added a distinctive rotten egg scent for instant leak detection. If you ever smell a gas odor, act fast and call the Fort Hill Natural Gas office immediately. For more safety tips, visit FHNGA.com.
Actual price will depend on product and subscription plan. Featured products are compounded drug products, which the FDA does not approve or verify for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. See website for details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Want a boost in and out of the bedroom? Hims has you covered. Introducing a new 2-in-1 approach to level up your game. Tadalafil for better bedroom performance and zinc for testosterone support. Put it all together and you've got what you need to turn things all the way up. Getting started is simple. Just go to hims.com/radio to start your free online visit. Through Hims, you can access ED treatments, including pills, chews, and more, 100% online. No office visits, no pharmacy lines. Just fill out a simple intake form, and a licensed medical provider will determine if treatment's right for you. If prescribed, it ships free and discreetly to your door. Find affordable treatment options at up to 95% less than brand names at hims.com/radio. That's hims.com/radio. hims.com/radio.
Evan Cohen here. Whether you're locking in your home run picks or riding with your favorite golfers this summer, ESPN Bet is your sportsbook for all the action. Go from checking stats on your favorite teams and players to placing bets in just a few taps. Plus, new customers can get $100 in bonus bets when you make your first $10 wager. Download the ESPN Bet app and sign up with promo code USL to get started today. Must be 21 plus. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. Offer not available in New York.
Powered by Upcountry Fiber, we are 105.5 and 97.5 The Roar. Providing fiber internet, HD TV, and phone service, Upcountry Fiber is a stronger connection.
No transfer portal here. We're here to stay. We are The Roar, where every day is game day.
Welcome you back in. Final hour of the program continues with Faxon and John right here on The Roar. Hey, real quick before we get back into the action with Grayson Mann, Morgan Coleman is who you need to go with for your real estate needs here in the upstate, folks. A proud Clemson soccer alum, a native of the upstate of South Carolina. Her playing days are over, but now she's just excelling in the real estate market and has for a very, very long time, helping buyers and sellers in the most stressful time of their lives for many, which is buying or selling a home. You know, it can be an overwhelming process. You need an expert and a trusted realtor with intricate knowledge of the area, like Morgan Coleman has as an upstate native, to help you navigate the current market. If you're considering buying or selling, go with Morgan Coleman. She'd love to chat, and she's easy to reach at 864-313-7639 or search Morgan Coleman Real Estate online to get started. That's 864-313-7639 or search Morgan Coleman Real Estate online to get started. We're continuing to visit with Grayson Mann here as a part of TigerNet Thursdays, but before we hop back into the action with him, I want to get Noah in here on the phone lines from Spartanburg, who held through the break. Noah, we got you. Oh, and it feels like, yeah, we're going to have to drop that. Noah, call back in. There's something tech-wise going on. We're getting R2-D2 over the phone line, so we're going to check on that. hope we can find a way to get that fixed for you.
But it's like the opening to like a 50s sci-fi movie, or like the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, that's what it felt like. We got Noah back loading up here now, so we should be good. It appears John's on the phone with him now, and we've been able to get those issues subsided. We're going to try it again. We're taking a gamble here, folks. Noah, we got you now.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. All right, we got you good. Loud and clear.
All right. I was just trying to get in. Y'all were talking about Miami. I think Miami's going to be pretty daggum good. They added a bunch of stuff defensively. I mean, Beck, he kind of, he could be better. But, I mean, you had David Blay, Sadir Mitchell, Xavier Lucas, and Charles Bentley. I think all of them are going to make plays. And then I will say Miami has been recruiting defensive linemen better than anybody in the country, I think.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you don't really know what you're going to get from them, but I think Miami's going to be a sleeper team. And then how do you feel about Fernando Mendoza going into this year?
I like it. I actually think Mendoza might be one of the most underrated quarterbacks in the country. I thought he played good ball at Cal last year, and I'm intrigued to see what the fit looks like, Noah, because Rourke was able to be elevated last year by Cignetti, obviously, and now you put a guy in like Mendoza, who I believe has better physical traits and is a little bit more mobile. I think that that could be very good. I don't know what to make of Indiana in totality, and admittedly, I haven't done enough research to know what they've lost and gained on their defense yet, but as far as just like baseline level analysis goes on the fit, I think Mendoza could be in store to have a monster season offensively for the Hoosiers.
Yeah, I mean, this might be a hot take, but I think he's going to elevate himself if Indiana can somewhat replicate what they did last year record-wise, I think he's going to elevate himself to be a first-round draft pick, like first-round pick as a quarterback. That's how good I think he is.
He's got the traits, man. He looks the part. He's big body. He can run. He's got a big arm. He's just got to put it all together mentally.
And let him let a team see him pass on air at a pro day, and they have somewhat of a decent record. That's my opinion. You know what I'm saying? Like. And then last question, well, last thing, how you feel about Ryder Lyons committing to BYU? I mean, they're so, and there's been a bag across every single sport.
Yeah, I saw, so Ryder Lyons, a five-star quarterback, that his top 50 recruit, he picked BYU over Oregon. Am I seeing this wrong? Correct me if I'm wrong. He's going on a mission, correct?
Yes, he is going on a Mormon mission.
He's going on the Mormon mission with LDS, so we're not going to see him for a little bit, but... it goes without saying that BYU clearly has the financial landscape to compete and excel in the current day of collegiate athletics, and it would be ignorant to think anything else as of right now, considering they've hauled a $20 million payroll in for their basketball roster this year, including $7-plus million of that going to A.J. Dibansta, who's currently the projected number one pick in the upcoming draft, so or for next year. So, yeah, BYU is loaded. They've clearly got dollar signs coming in, and they're going to be a player for a while. People might want to get used to seeing them in some of these conversations for deep postseason runs in multiple sports. And listen, when there's smoke, there's fire. If there's money for the basketball payroll, watch out in football, because they're just going to keep getting more and more talented, because that means there's cash available there for their football program to utilize as well. So I think BYU is going to be a team that is trying to get into one of the big two, being the Big Ten or the SEC, sooner rather than later. And I know that that doesn't make geographical or cultural sense, but again, money talks, and if there's a team that has enough money to buy their way in to you know, the cool kids club, if you will, in the Big Two, I think BYU might try and take that sort of path sooner rather than later if they do have as much money as I believe them to have.
And then last thing, we'll take the rest off the air. I'm going to keep saying it until the season starts and they prove me wrong. UNLV is a contender. That's all I have to say. Y'all have a great day. I appreciate
Dan Mullen.
You always,
sir. Yes, sir. I appreciate you getting in with this, Noah. 654 Roar is the number. Listen, coaching football has never been Dan Mullen's issue. Recruiting is Dan Mullen's issue. And if you want to talk about UNLV, and we'll get back to ACC here in a second, but if we want to talk about UNLV, I think that's a perfect fit for Mullen, because he can kind of just play portal combat every year. He doesn't have to recruit. He doesn't have to retain. They have money. They have more money than the majority of the competition within their league. They have a sell of an NFL stadium in a massive city in Las Vegas with a ton of nightlife and more, right? And that's what it is now. You have to sell the college athlete on the lifestyle, and it's just a part of the game. But I think that Dan Mullen's very well equipped for this current era of college football, when there have been so many guys that have not been well equipped for it. In a weird way, it almost benefits Mullen, because he doesn't want to recruit or be out on the recruiting trail or invest in freshmen. Yeah. He can just go pick and choose his portal guys and coach football. And that's what Dan Mullen's best at, is coaching football.
Talk about the NIL capital of the world being Las Vegas. I mean, there's a lot of opportunities there. Should be... I think fascinating is probably the right word to use for that kind of situation, but we'll see.
Yeah.
To Noah's comment about, or your comment about BYU being like a player in the Big Ten, SEC not making any sense. When California is in the ACC, I think we throw every geographical logic out of the table.
Yeah. Listen, if you can pony up a dollar sign, there's a lot you can make work in 2025, and especially in collegiate athletics. So BYU, I would keep your eye on them going forward. Now, let's talk a little bit further about Miami. You're bringing back Reuben Bain. You've completely transcended your secondary. You are recruiting the D-line at an elite level, as he alluded to, and you've got the pieces in place. Now, we do this every year with Miami. I guess my question to you, for lack of better term, is this the year where they get to Charlotte? I'm not going to talk playoff. I'm not going to talk national championship, because guess what? Mario Cristobal hasn't earned anywhere near close to that. And we give it to him every year. We, not including myself, the media gives it to him every year. I'm not giving him that crap, because he never wins. But I do think if there's a year for him to get to Charlotte, it could be this year. Your thoughts?
There's just, we have so many talking points and so many conversations about Mario Cristobal, and this being the year assembling all of this talent. And at the end of the day, we're watching Miami in the Pop-Tarts Bowl. We're watching Oregon on the outside looking in, playing in the Rose Bowl back when there was the four-team playoff. So in my mind, it's he's assembled a bunch of talent, but they've got a B-minus coach. And I'm not sure that elevates to that certain tier that you want when you're at Miami.
SMU is the next team I want to talk about. 654 Roar, if you want to get in on ACC football. Grayson and I will be up at, in Charlotte next month at ACC kickoff to give you guys a ton of content. So we're kind of giving a precursor to that as of right now. I will say this. SMU is being underrated by most headed into the upcoming season in relation to how much talent they were able to retain. And they also retained their quarterback. And Kevin Jennings was a big catalyst ever after he took over that job for Preston Stone as to why they had an immense amount of success last season. Now, can SMU build on it? And can they replicate that success is the question everybody seems to be asking. I actually, I know he whined during the AAC championship game. I actually like Rhett. I think Rhett's a good coach. He seems like a really good dude too. And he seems like he's got a nice culture established. And the Mustangs, I will say this. The Mustangs return only two starters on defense. However, they got one of the best portal classes on defense, and they kept pretty much everybody except RJ Maryland and Smith on offense. So the retention is heavy on the offensive side of the ball, which was the identity of their team. Their defense was good, not great. They've had some churning, some turnover there. Where are you at on the Mustangs, and how do we project this upcoming season for a team that has a lot of continuity on offense but not so much on defense?
Yeah, they caught a lot of teams by surprise, it felt like, last year, especially with that specific tone and tempo they run on offense with Kevin Jennings. He feels like the perfect quarterback for what they're trying to run, where it feels like you're pressing the Y button, you're running that no huddle every single time, like on the college football video game. But you got Kevin Jennings, you got a litany of starters returning on offense. Defense is going to be that key spot. I do potentially see that November game where SMU comes to Clemson being one of those ACC championship spot clinchers where maybe SMU's got a loss. Maybe Clemson's going in undefeated. Who knows? There's so many factors that could play in to get to that point. But I like SMU. I like Lashley. I know he was more or less making his case for the college football playoff after that Clemson loss, and then thoroughly gets smacked by Penn State a month later. So take that as you will. But I like Penn State. I think defensively, you're bringing in a lot of talent to the portal, so that's always going to be a question mark. But I think that might be easier to figure out than maybe bringing in something on the offensive side, where you've already got that continuity established. You're comfortable winning shootouts. So I like SMU, maybe not as much as I like maybe a Louisville or Georgia Tech, but I do think they're a threat to compete for a spot in Charlotte.
Wrapping things up with Grayson Mann in the next couple of minutes, a couple more questions for Grayson Mann here as a part of TigerNet Thursdays. Also, Texter gets in and says the Latter-day Saints have a reserve fund of $206 billion. That would explain it. Yeah. I mean, there's some conclusions that we can draw there, obviously. But yeah, that's a lot of money.
That's a lot of...
Can I let me hold $20? that's a lot of money. Grayson, in all seriousness, though, Clemson defense is a question we've gotten on 279, and I've got a way I want to attack this as far as framing goes.
Okay.
So we talked about SMU as a team that's had a lot of roster turnover on that defensive side of the football. Clemson's the complete inverse. Clemson's returning the majority of their defense, and the majority of their returning defensive production has them up there with some of the best in the country. However, the level of continuity is not fully there because you've had coaching staff changes on that side of the football. So from your perspective, how do you balance change in relation to player personnel versus coach, and what are you anticipating Clemson's unit to look like and improve at in the upcoming season?
You know, it's going to be really fascinating, too, because that first real test, and Sweeney joked about it, is we're going to find out what Tom Allen's made of, because he gets LSU and that high-flying offense, you have Barry and Brown, Nussmeier, all those different pieces for that first game. But for Clemson, the biggest issue, I think, wasn't necessarily the players on the field. I think it was just the way that they were being coached. And that flat out, I know that's going to come out as really harsh, but you look at the Texas game, you look at the South Carolina game, the form tackling, the way that they're approaching certain games, certain specific schemes, it just wasn't up to that standard. And I think Allen comes in, you saw in the spring a different look and a different, I hate to say vibe because it sounds so cliche-ridden, but there's a different energy with this Clemson group. And the tackling at the spring, so much better. Just the way they're approaching, the way they're wrapping up, the way they're getting to that point of attack, there's just certain techniques that Allen was able to teach, or maybe it's just a mindset type of thing, but it feels like everyone's bought in immediately on what he's selling, and so I think that's going to be the ultimate, and what I'm excited most to talk to some of these players when we get to fall camp in Charlotte is just what has this last couple months been like with Tom Allen and how he's built this defense. That is the final piece. If it works with him, we assume Clemson will be what we expect them to be, and so we've talked about so much about how continuity is so important. And Clemson's bringing back so much on the offensive side, and I think that'll probably benefit them as Allen figures it out for maybe the first month, as you rely more on Klubnik and co. to get it done. And then once the defense settles in,
yeah.
I think probably by mid-September, we'll see what it truly looks like. Because I do think there's going to be a lot of experimentation in those first few weeks.
And there's a learning curve, right, when you're learning. Look at the first year of the Clemson offense under Garrett Riley.
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to be all sunshine and rainbows immediately. And there's going to be a learning curve, and there's going to be a learning process. So I'm excited, man. Tom Allen's a dog. That dude's a cold-blooded killer. You can just tell with the mentality that he's got towards the game of football. He's got a lot of respect in the coaching world, and I'm extremely excited to see what he can showcase for this defense in the upcoming season. 654 Roar is the number if you want to get in. We've got a couple more minutes with Grayson. Austin gets in on the text line, our guy Peanut, and says, in the ACC, my opinion is that SMU, Georgia Tech, Louisville, Miami, and maybe Duke is that second group behind Clemson. How would you guys stack that group? Before we get to a couple more questions about LSU and the linebackers, let's quickly kind of give a hierarchy, if you're good with that.
Yeah, let's do it.
I'm going to go... Yeah, I hate what I'm about to do, and I'm so sorry. I think Miami's probably going to end up playing Clemson in the ACC championship game.
Oh, don't do it.
After that, I would go Louisville and Georgia Tech, then SMU, then Duke. And then my dark horse that could potentially make something shake towards that, you know, level of the standings, and I'm really about to just get tomatoes thrown at me, I think there's some upward mobility for a team like Florida State. I do. Ooh. I don't think the schedule's that difficult. If you had to give me three teams that I'm selling stock and equity in right now, NC State might be Garbo this year. I'm selling the North Carolina stock because I don't think Belichick cares, if you want me to just be completely blunt and candid. I don't know how you could care after winning however many Super Bowls he's got at this point, and now you're playing in the ACC. Like, not trying to be disrespectful, how are you getting up on the road in Berkeley as a six-time Super Bowl champion head coach with Gio Lopez at quarterback? There's too many moving pieces there for me to be comfortable buying that. But that's how I'm shaking things out here right now.
That's a combo for another time.
I would have Miami at two. I think I would have Georgia Tech, Louisville, and SMU all in a similar category. I'd probably take Louisville gunned ahead of those three, then Tech, then SMU, and then Duke and FSU would be my next two as like the sixth and the seventh best teams, or the seventh and the eighth, whatever. And like on FSU, like I'm saying, I think they're going to win seven or eight in that range. They're not a contender for this league. I want to preface with that as well, but that's where I'm at.
Okay. And I think if I had to quickly get through that the tier list, I think I'd put Clemson in its own at one. I think there's a category below, and I think it's two teams. I think it's Louisville, Georgia Tech. I think those are two teams that I really like. If I had to put like that third category, I'd probably throw Miami as probably one of its own because they're such an enigma. They're such a mystery. And then I'd probably throw the SMUs, the Dukes. Florida State's a weird one. They're probably in their own separate. I think they're going to be more of a disaster, but it could be a pleasant surprise. So it's sort of that quick lightning round sort of fashion. But I think if I had to choose Clemson's biggest challengers for the ACC crown this year, I really do like Louisville and Georgia Tech. UNC's a big mystery, but
yeah.
We don't have enough time in this segment for delve into why Belichick, I think, is going to be pretty successful in year one.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Grayson, tell us where we can check out your content before we let you get out of here, man.
Yeah, find me on Twitter at gray_man21 and our stuff at tigernet.com. Got a lot of stuff. Fascinating podcast coming tomorrow. You guys won't want to miss it.
I love the Georgia Tech propaganda. I was high on them last year. Obviously, they've got that knack for upsets. I don't know.
They're my Virginia Tech of yours this year. Like, I'm riding high. I'm ready to die on the hill, man.
Brent Pry made me look so stupid with that take last year. The inability to win a one-score game. Brother. Can we kick a field goal when it makes sense to kick a field goal?
We had this conversation last summer where I defended Louisville over your Virginia Tech take.
You did.
Ah,
I got that one wrong. I did get that one wrong. Hopefully, Kyron Drones is back. I'm not buying into any of that this year. I don't know. If I'm just being honest once again, I don't know how Pry kept his job after losing 4 one-score games. His record as a head coach is 1-13 in 14 one-score games, and John's doing the little Johnny Manziel dollar sign. That's probably right. I don't know if they've got the money to buy him out. So quick break here on the program. More ACC football discourse. I want to get John's thoughts on a lot of you guys' text messages right after this.
It's time to discover the convenience and time savings of contact-free pickup with Ingles Curbside. Just visit shop.ingles-markets.com or download the app. And your Ingles personal shopper gets to work with specialized training on how to select the freshest items for a pre-scheduled pickup. They'll even text you with updates. You pull up to a designated space and your personal shopper delivers your items right to your vehicle. Fresh, fast, and affordable. It's all in the bag. Ingles, low prices, love the savings.
When you need plumbing and drain services, call Roto-Rooter and get the problem fixed fast.
Roto-Rooter is locally owned and operated. We've been making troubles go down the drain since 1935, and you can count on us for reliable service at your home or business. Call 1-800-GET-ROTO. That's 1-800-GET-ROTO, or schedule service online at rotorooter.com.
Call Roto-Rooter, that's the name, and away go troubles down the drain. Roto-Rooter.
For a move that's as smooth as it is affordable, trust Tiger Moving Company. Our team of highly trained professionals is dedicated to providing extraordinary customer service, making your transition stress-free. Recognized with multiple awards, we are Greenville's top choice for reliable moving services. Don't let moving be a hassle. Visit our website, tigermovinggreenville.com, or call 908-9028 today to experience the Tiger difference. Tiger Moving Company, where your move is our mission.
So you've decided you want to have your garage floor professionally coated, but with so many companies to choose from, who should you hire? For nearly 15 years, Iron Drive Floor Coatings has installed the highest quality concrete coatings all over the upstate. With over 1 million square feet installed and the most 5-star reviews in our industry, our guarantees stand strong. Don't trust just anybody to coat your garage floor. Trust the company with a proven track record of quality work. Get a free quote today at irondrivegaragefloors.com.
Clemson fans, this is your store. The Tiger Sports Shop has the best selection of Clemson apparel, accessories, and game day essentials. Nike, Lululemon, polos, hoodies, hats, tees, you name it, we've got it. Plus, by joining our Tiger Rewards loyalty program, you'll earn points and unlock exclusive perks throughout the season. Shop local at our two Clemson locations or visit us online anytime at tigersports.com. Don't just cheer for the Tigers, wear your pride. The Tiger Sports Shop, your Clemson headquarters.
Go Tigers!
Spring is a time of growth, but it can also reveal hidden problems beneath your home. Call Canty Foundation Specialists for a free inspection of the cracks in your walls, uneven floors, and sticking doors. These are signs you shouldn't ignore. Canty provides expert solutions to protect your home. Visit CantyCanFixIt.com or call 864-403-5263. Canty Foundation Specialists.
Canty Can Fix It.
Hi friends, Mickey Plowler here. I'd be thrilled if you joined us Friday, 6 to 9 a.m. for the Mickey Plowler Show right here on The Roar. Four guests on a Friday. Scott Reimer, the vet of the Tiger pregame show. We'll visit with Josh Williams. We'll get our ReedyLandCo.com's hunting and fishing report, and ESPN play-by-play voice Roy Philpott will be with us. We'll review the Mets and the Braves, talk an awful lot of college football, and get you ready for the sports weekend, get you primed what's coming on the sports weekend. We'll do that Friday, 6 to 9 a.m. for the Mickey Plowler Show right here on The Roar.
1-1, swung on, driven to left center field and deep. The outfielders look up. They get coming back on that one. That baby's out of here. Austin Riley with a home run.
The only place in the upstate to catch Atlanta Braves games is right here on The Roar, where every day is game day.
Final segment of the program here on a Thursday. It's been a fun one here with Faxon and John on The Roar. You're listening to Faxon Sports. John, it's your show in the final segment of the program. I'll let you go whatever direction you want. Obviously, we're going to talk some Braves. If you want to do any of these texts as well on ACC football, feel free, because I feel like we got a lot of good topics on that as well. But the floor is yours.
You know, like a little bit, enjoyed the ACC discourse between you and Grayson there a little bit. You were talking a lot about Florida State. So I went during the break and looked up there the Seminoles win total at 7.5. And I just can't see it. I just can't find it. I know it's not the world's most difficult schedule. I understand that. But I just am having a difficult time finding Florida State back to being an 8-win football team.
Is your lack of belief structured in the failures of last year, the lack of belief in Castellanos, the lack of belief in Norvell, or the lack of belief in the supporting cast around the quarterback, or all of the above?
D, all of the above.
Okay, so and
I also worry about, because last year it was very evident that that team quit. It was very evident.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about.
So when you look at the beginning part of this schedule, you host Alabama to start, East Texas A&M, Kent State, then you go to Virginia on a Friday night, come back, host Miami. As we sit here right now on June 26th, I think after the Miami game, I think Florida State is going to be 2-3. I think they lose in Charlottesville right now. And so at that point, if you're 2-3 after October 4th, with Pitt at Stanford, Wake at Clemson, Virginia Tech at NC State at Florida, I got to find six? No. You're not getting it because you already had, so you mean to tell me that you're only going to lose maybe one game the rest of the way when a Florida State team who we have seen quit on this coach, and we have seen either side of the Florida State-Miami rivalry, whoever loses that game, things normally spiral out of control for like 2 weeks for them because of the emotional investment they place into that game. I understand kind of the tiers where you guys are putting them. I'm not as high on the Seminoles this year as you are. And I'm not saying that you're high on them.
Yeah, no.
But I'm not even to like a 7-5 flirting with their win total. I think they're going to scratch and claw to get to a bowl game.
All right, this is kind of...
Because I also think Pitt is a better team than them. And that's a loss that could happen again after the Miami game if they're feeling sorry for themselves because Miami just walked in the building and beat them. You could be 2-4 halfway through this season. I mean, granted, you have some nice landing spots with Stanford and Wake Forest and, in my opinion, Virginia Tech, because I don't think they're going to be very good either. But I think Florida State's locker room may be as fragile as any in the country. And I worry if you're already talking all that smack how you have run this league, going to Charlottesville on a Friday night and losing, when you probably are already starting to think about Saturday, October 4th against the Canes, I just don't see it, man. I don't see it. Like, Texter gets in, Mr. B on the M's Curving text line, had a Florida State fan friend tell me he would be happy with 7 wins and would be ecstatic with 8. Yeah. You should be ecstatic with 8 on that schedule. Because that's even assuming that going on another Friday night at NC State that you don't trip on your own 2 feet. That's not letting the travel all the way to California to play Stanford not make you tired and, you know, kind of check out. There's just a lot of spots along the way with a coaching staff that I don't trust.
That's, yeah. Okay.
And if your two primary playmakers are Squirrel White and Deuce Robinson.
That's a problem.
There's so many things outside of the logo on the helmet. Like, there's just too many football things that I'm looking at that I just don't buy.
All right, I've got two things here. First and foremost, the way that I like to attack schedules is giving... I don't like to give guaranteed wins, but I like to give wins, you know, because at the end of the day, Florida State's not going to go 2-10 again. And there are 4 games on this schedule that I feel really confident about Florida State winning. Then we have some coin flips. Then we have some losses. The 4 games that I feel very confident FSU wins are East Texas A&M, Kent State, Stanford, and Wake Forest. If they lose any of those games, I would be floored. Again, no, I know the Stanford game's on the road, and I know it's a week after Miami and Pitt and a travel game. If anyone in the ACC loses to Stanford this year, they need to be banished to, I don't know, the G League, the Slovenian League, wherever, a different continent for all
I care.
You're
going to Conference USA.
Like, brother, they didn't have a coach 3.5 weeks ago. They have a GM that's, like, running the show. They don't have a team. Like, they lost everyone from an already bad team. You have to beat Stanford. So those are the 4 I'm targeting for FSU as my gimmies. Now I start to look at some of these coin flips, and I start to look at some of these rosters. I understand that I'm a little higher as of right now, but I also... There are some concepts that we have talked about, and even when I didn't even know you as well, John, like I'm talking 2-3 years ago,
yeah.
Conversations that we had were, what is Mike Norvell without a run game? That's been a constant narrative throughout the course of his career is, can Mike Norvell succeed when he does not have a run game to rely on? And I think my answer to that this year is, I don't know if I trust his run game. So that leads me to believe to have some skepticism with what Florida State's going to provide on the football field because Mike Norvell's never been able to succeed without a consistent run game. Now, I like Davis. I like Roy Dell. The offensive line having 4 different pieces and no continuity concerns me. Do I like that all of them are redshirt seniors? Yeah. Having 5 fifth-year guys up front sounds great. But they've only had 2.5 to 3 months to get acclimated and just together as a group. And when you're playing offensive line, as you used to, John.
With a new offensive line coach.
It's not easy to just patch holes and mix and match and act like everything's going to be great because you have good individual players.
Well, especially, if you get embarrassed two of those first five games, I think there's a chance that Alabama could just come and just eviscerate them.
That game's going to be fun,
like, man. 49-10 in Doak. I don't find anything that I really like here. And you know, your point about Mike Norvell, like, how good is he without a run game? I mean, how many coaches out there outside of Mike Leach are good without a run game? Not many.
Yeah, you got to have a run game.
So, and you hired Gus Malzahn and brought in Thomas Castellanos to enhance the run game. Okay? What happens when you start putting eight in the box?
Who's creating separation one-on-one
outside? Ain't Squirrel White.
And then is your O-line going to be able to keep Castellanos upright? And then can Castellanos make the throws consistently? Those are my questions right now with FSU. I'm a little higher than John is, but I also... it's undeniable that there are a lot of reasons to be concerned with the structure of this roster and really just the standing of this program, if we're being candid. Again, Norvell is on the hot seat right now is the way that I'm viewing this. He just went 2-10.
If they hadn't given him the ridiculous contract, he would have been fired last year.
Yeah, I think
if the buyout wasn't what it is, he would have been fired last year.
Now, I will say this, John, because Texter points out something that I was going to bring up as like a devil's advocate point, but I actually think the closer and closer we get to this season and the more tape I watch, I understand what the name looks like, okay? And I understand what the brand is, and I know the success, and I know I get it, okay? And I'm not siding with Thomas Castellanos by saying this. Are we sure that Alabama is top 10 in the country good? Because their starting quarterback right now is Ty Simpson, and we have never seen Ty Simpson play good college football at any stage of his career. And then you look outside, and yeah, Ryan Williams is great. Caden Proctor at left tackle. You bring back four of your offensive line starters, three or four of them, and you bring up a guy like, you know, Formby at right tackle. You feel good there. You feel good at running back with Jam Miller and Richard Young. It's not your typical Bama running back crop, but you're good, right? You're better on paper than Florida State. Is Alabama really leaps and bounds better than Florida State roster for roster? And is this Alabama roster good enough to be receiving the top 8-10 hype that they're receiving? Or are we showcasing that level of respect because of what the brand says and what the name on the helmet says? I'm not saying that FSU is going to win, but Tiger Jet got in and said they think they can keep it close. I tend to agree. I think they're going to cover that 2-touchdown spread.
I don't. I also think that I think last year at Alabama, because everybody was still from the Nick Saban way of being brought in, I think a lot of the approach last year was, oh, cool, we have a substitute teacher. Like, we don't have to, you know, do all the attention to detail stuff.
Yeah, he was letting them use social media and all that. Yeah.
I think year two of Kalen DeBoer, now he has an understanding of what things are like in Tuscaloosa. He has an understanding of how to recruit it, how to navigate it. He has his offensive coordinator, Ryan Grubb, now joining the fold, who he did not have last year. I think the wide receiver room has the potential to be, you know, one of the better ones in the SEC.
I can't wait to watch Williams play.
You know, I think the quarterback battle will be interesting. I also think there's a situation where either Austin Mack or Ty Simpson are just holding it on until Keelan Russell's ready, the true freshman, the five-star that they brought in.
Yeah.
And I still have some belief in this defense. I don't know if they are going to be like a top 10 unit nationally or anything like that, like they were with Saban and Kirby and all of that. But Kane Womack is a good defensive mind, very good football coach, and I think works very well opposite Kalen DeBoer. Those guys with their track records, not just at Alabama, but where they have been over the course of their careers, they win. All they do is win. I think there's a lot more substance to this coaching staff than I do believe in Tallahassee.
I agree with that. I think DeBoer's a lot better of a coach and has a lot better position.
I think he will
coaches.
Have them 10 times more prepared than Mike Norvell and his staff will.
I like that. I think that's the best point made.
I don't think Alabama's going 16-0 and winning the title and not taking a loss along the way, but I certainly don't think they're taking a loss in Tallahassee.
What's your level of concern with Alabama related to those quarterbacks? Because it does feel worth acknowledging. Ty Simpson has never started a game outside of that South Florida game, which he played terribly in. And Ty Simpson has never thrown a college touchdown. He's been in, this is his fourth year in college, and he has yet to throw a touchdown. He's never thrown more than 25 passes in a season. He's never played outside of garbage time. And Austin Mack has three total passing attempts. I don't, for what it's worth, I think DeBoer and his staff wipe Norvell off the planet. And I really, for a large part, wish that Alabama hired Norvell and he took the job, because that would have been a disaster.
Oh, yeah. No, it would have been great.
They're in much better hands with Kalen DeBoer than they are Mike Norvell. And I also still do tend to agree that Alabama is going to win the game. But renovated stadium, revitalized fan base, right? Biggest FSU football game since the Orange Bowl 2 years ago. Norvell's got juice back in the program, right? New quarterback, shiny new toys on the outside. I'm just trying to take the FSU angle of this.
No, I understand that.
It could be an intimidating environment for a guy to make their first real college football, you know, debut, and a guy like Simpson and Mack, and neither of those guys have showcased us in much.
They haven't showed us much, but then again, you also had Jalen Milroe. And I agree with Kalen DeBoer, even though some of those games weren't great, he should have started him every single game last year running that offense.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I actually kind of agree with some of the comments that our quarterback, Cade Klubnik, has made, you know, talking about how much he respects these guys who have stuck around, Ty Simpson being one that he named. Okay. Remember, this was the same player that Clemson fans are making fun of on the Amsco Roofing text line right now that 4 years ago got into this same text line and complained that Dabo doesn't know what he's doing because Ty Simpson chose Alabama over Clemson.
That's a good point. That's a good point. I'm interested to see what Simpson's got. I've always believed him to be talented. There's just been a roadblock of opportunity, and he's got a chance. If he's got the goods, man, you're QB1 at Alabama. You're going to have a chance to show it. You got Ryan Williams on the outside, a couple quality receivers.
With that coaching staff and those receivers?
Yeah, like, you're never going to have a better chance to succeed in your life than with Ryan Williams on the outside and with Kalen DeBoer, you know, helping catalyze an offense for you. So we'll talk more football tomorrow. Man, I'm excited to spot the ball. Great job as always today, John. Hopefully the Braves and the Pirates can get the job done today, and we will see you tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Everybody, Kwok and Ben up next with Out of Bounds. See you soon.
WCCP-FM 105.5, Clemson, Greenville, Anderson.